across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Back now at 7:06, and welcome back to Up North News Radio. For this Wednesday, October 11th, this is Sausage Pizza Day, Pet Obesity Day, National Emergency Nurses Day, National Curves Day, National Bring Your Teddy Bear to School Day. This is General Pulaski Day. It commemorates Polish General Kazimierz Pulaski, a hero of the American Revolution, who died on this day in 1779 from battle wounds suffered in Savannah, Georgia. And this is also National Coming Out Day, with a note that homophobia thrives in silence. And so while nobody should be pressured to come out, this is a day to celebrate those who do embrace their sexual identity and are looking simply for the respect and inclusion that we all deserve. Coming up this hour, Republicans continue working to make voting less convenient and undermine confidence in elections, but Democrats in the legislature are busy introducing new bills to protect democracy, promote voting, and increase transparency of the big money that's infecting our politics. Representative Lee Snodgrass will be here to discuss the ongoing fight against those who are promoting conspiracy theories and conspiring to overturn elections. And so we'll visit with her. We'll visit with Todd Alba a little later on this hour as well to see what he is talking about on his weekday afternoon show here all across the Civic Media Radio Network. A reminder, if you missed our last hour or any of our past hours and programs, you can catch them in one of several ways. You can head over to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. Click on shows, and at every show, you can see every hour a title and show description and a link to either listen through the website or listen through your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, Google, and more. So head over to civicmedia.us and catch the show that way. You can join us here at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. And our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Didn't really have much to mention in sports, what with the Packers had lost on Monday. The Brewers are out of things. But I should at least make a nod to the playoffs that are ongoing in Major League Baseball, especially since the Minnesota Twins are still involved, although they are now hanging by a thread. The Astros beat the Twins at Target Field last night 9-1, and that gives the Astros a 2-1 lead over Minnesota in their best-of-five American League Division Series. And then in the other ALDS matchup, the Cinderella story is over for the Baltimore Orioles. They were swept by the Texas Rangers after Texas defeated them 7-1 yesterday. So get this, the Baltimore Orioles had just a dream season. They played 53 different series against teams this season, 2 games, 3 games, 4 games. They were never swept in any of those series throughout the regular season. The first time they were ever swept in a series was this 3-game sweep right here against the Texas Rangers. Over in the National League, Arizona has not yet played a home game in the postseason. They eliminated the Brewers with 2 games at American Family Field, and they have stunned the LA Dodgers. The 100 wins for the LA Dodgers in the regular season. Arizona beat them in both games at Dodger Stadium, and now Arizona can advance to the National League Championship Series at home if they were to defeat the Dodgers in the Desert Southwest. The other National League series is Atlanta playing at Philadelphia, and that best-of-five series is tied at 1 game apiece. And I should note that the National Hockey League got its season started last night as well. An interesting note here about Mary Lou Retton, the Olympic gymnast, America's sweetheart from the 1984 Olympic Games. Apparently, she is fighting for her life in a Texas hospital in intensive care with a rare form of pneumonia. Retton is 55 years old. She had become the first American woman to win the Olympic all-around title. Her mom says that she has started a fundraising campaign on her daughter's behalf for medical expenses because Mary Lou Retton does not currently have medical insurance. And again, I don't know the whole story behind that, how much of it is a factor of finances, a factor of personal choice, or whatever the case may be. It just simply underscores the notion again how very, very odd it is in the United States of America, nearly alone among organized democracies, where people go bankrupt because of medical bills. Because we, unlike every other country out there, have not yet come to the conclusion that if you provide a baseline of medical security to folks, they will be healthier, and the economy will be better. But this is a battle we're still fighting generations later that it first came to be. And not that Mary Lou Retton's case is going to move a lot of the hard hearts on Capitol Hill, but it does give us one more example of what we could be doing differently to help people avoid bankruptcy and help people avoid, frankly, life-threatening illnesses like we're seeing from Mary Lou Retton, who's in a Texas hospital right now. Take a break here. We'll look at temperatures around the state, and we'll get our weatherology forecast for midweek as well. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back.
I was raised on country sunshine, green grass beneath my feet, running through fields of days.
Dottie West was born this day 91 years ago, 1932. Passed away after a car crash in 1991, Country Sunshine being one of her big hits. And I thank our listener, Roger, for tipping us off to something we could play besides Hall & Oates for Daryl Hall's birthday today. All right, looking at temperatures around the state as we come into the 7 o'clock hour here, everything has dropped a degree or two from the last hour. Lake Wissota up here, we're down to 37 degrees, Madison at 35, Waukesha 41, La Crosse is at 36 degrees, Wausau 44, Wisconsin Rapids 44, in Green Bay it's 46 degrees, and Hayward 42 degrees right now. And that gives us time to check the forecast for the rest of today, midweek, and heading toward the weekend. And conditions that may not necessarily be quite as nice as what we're seeing here this morning. We're going to get the full details now from meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning.
So what do we have here? I understand that while things here on Lake Wissota, fairly clear skies, it feels really nice, but that we shouldn't put away the rain gauge just yet necessarily?
Yeah, not quite yet. Yeah, like you mentioned, it looks like sunny skies for the southern half of the state today around Baldwin as well. Otherwise, partly sunny for everyone else. A warm front begins to push through today, so a little warmer compared to yesterday, mid-50s to right around about 60 degrees for most, getting into the mid-60s around Richland Center. Then a chance for some rain showers coming in for the southern half of Wisconsin tonight. Chance for showers for the second half of the work week here for all. Looks like mid-50s Thursday for everyone, then mid to upper 50s on Friday from Oshkosh and everyone south, then upper 40s around 50 around central and west central Wisconsin on Friday. For the weekend, a chance for showers and storms to start it out for all on Saturday, highs in the mid to low 50s. Sunday, it looks like a chance for some showers from Milwaukee over to Madison, then cloudy and dry for everyone else. So the highs all for all once again around that mid to low 50 mark, which is going to be a bit below average for this time of the year.
All right, Jennifer. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Looking now as we continue unpacking the news on this Wednesday morning. Well, actually, I want to give you one musical note here first, and that is about another passing of country music instrumentalist, banjo player, Buck Trent. He was a two-time CMA Group of the Year winner, a prominent banjo-playing member of the cast of Hee Haw. He died on Monday in Branson, Missouri at the age of 85. As I'm looking at news from around the country here and other political notes, I realize I'm going to have to reach out to one of our sister publications through Courier Newsroom. Up North News is a part of Courier Newsroom, and one of their other state-based outlets is the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina. and talk to them about what has happened since Republicans in the legislature there gained a supermajority in the legislature, able to override the vetoes of the Democratic governor, Roy Cooper. Well, that just happened in North Carolina in allowing Republicans to do what they did in Wisconsin in terms of tearing down the state elections board and remaking it in a way that is liable to lead to more gridlock. Republicans were able to override Governor Cooper's veto of the bill. It's a long-sought goal of the GOP for bipartisan boards. And look, bipartisan boards are not the issue. The issue is that the boards are set up that they could deadlock on things like establishing early voting locations or certifying results in the state. It's similar to what happened in Wisconsin when the nationally regarded and well-honored Government Accountability Board was torn apart by Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature because that panel of retired judges was getting awfully close to discovering potentially illegal campaign coordination activity by then-Governor Scott Walker. The system that we have now, the Wisconsin Elections Commission, was again set up for gridlock with three Democratic members, three Republican members. It's led to some very acrimonious meetings and more than a fair share of 3-3 votes that have been good or bad, depending on your interpretation of any given issue. And this is something that North Carolina has now been able to do with their own state elections board in terms of remaking it more to their liking and making it tougher once again to protect voting rights and to promote voting. And it's the kind of stuff we will discuss with State Representative Lee Snodgrass coming up in just a second or two here. There's also a note here about how the Biden White House is starting a new effort to crack down on tens of billions of dollars in junk fees. You've heard about this before. It's coming in waves. There's some new rules that are going to be coming down through the Federal Trade Commission and through the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau toward banning junk fees in the business and the banking sector. It's coming back to something that a theme that we have talked about many times on this program, and it is the theme of increasing competition. For all those who like to say that liberals and progressives are, you know, hostile toward capitalism and they're more like, you know, socialists in waiting, the fact of the matter is, at the moment, it's Democrats and progressives who are more the party of protecting capitalism for all, not just for a select wealthy few. The whole foundation of capitalism is competition. And competition does not happen by itself. Left in a vacuum, businesses will try to outdo or acquire one another to the point where a business has a monopoly or near monopoly power and can then price gouge and do whatever it wants to consumers, to employees, to the environment. It is something that, you know, Adam Smith noted himself a couple of hundred years back in writing about capitalism, is that it requires a government of the people to be looking out for the people and making sure that competition is enhanced, that it is robust in a capitalistic system. That's something the Biden administration has been focusing on, promoting competition in the industry. For example, the Consumer Finance Protection Board released a rule proposal on excessive credit card fees already. The Federal Trade Commission has been targeting unfair practices in ticketing and other fees. And every one of us can point to something. In my case, it would be airline tickets, but for you, it might be concert tickets or something else, where the fees are just ridiculous. Again, not to say that there is not a time and place for a reasonable service fee, but that's the kind of thing normally that is baked into the price of something. So when I'm shopping for airline tickets, I can't trust you if one airline says that this ticket's going to cost me $340 and another airline says it's going to cost $350. There's no guarantee when you first look at that, that the airline charging $10 less doesn't actually hit you with $30 to $50 in fees once you click through and look at the fees for baggage or the fees for picking your seat in the airplane and a whole host of just junk. And I think it's rightly mentioned that way. There's new rules proposed by the Federal Trade Commission that would prohibit businesses from burying fees within a transaction and force them to present the amount and the purposes of those surcharges up front, according to this article from CNBC. And that could potentially save consumers $10 billion over the next decade. Under the proposed rule, the commission would be able to secure refunds for consumers if the mandate is violated. The rule would not just return money to people's pockets, but also restore a degree of justice to American families and restore fairness in our markets, according to Federal Trade Commission Chair Lina Khan. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has slapped fines on Wells Fargo and Bank of America and Regions Bank in the past, citing extraneous overdraft fees or overcharges. These are all small things in the sense of, you know, we're talking about service fees, the things that are a tiny fraction of the overall revenue of a company, of a bank, of an airline or whatnot. So on the one hand, they may seem like small potatoes, but if you let something like this get out of hand, it just makes it that much easier for either a company to acquire monopoly power through essentially price fixing, or it allows for collusion of multiple companies within an industry that they can all work together and, again, gouge consumers to one degree or another. And it's only if our own elected officials are willing to step in from time to time and punish those who are basically restricting free competition, it's only having those elected officials in place that is going to help the consumer and help the employee and help the environment not get abused. So when you hear, primarily, of course, from the Republican side, when you hear that, you know, government should be run like a business and that we should, you know, trust the quote unquote job creators to do the right thing, keep in mind that that is not always going to be the case. You know, the fairy tale of the benevolent corporation that is always going to look out for its hometown and its workers. Is it possible to overregulate an industry? Oh, of course it is. And that's why we have elections. But we can't unelect a company once it has monopoly power over us. When you're at the point now where only four companies control most of the meatpacking in this country and all of the other examples that we've brought up over time. So yeah, start with junk fees. Go after the credit cards. Go after the airlines. Send that message that the American people, the consumer, should come first. And that there is absolutely all manner of room for capitalism. There's all manner of room for profit. But that there is no room, there is no tolerance for price gouging, for collusion that hurts employees, and practices like that. That's where we need responsible people in office. One more quick note before Representative Lee Snodgrass joins us. The Wisconsin Healthcare Association is seeing the effects of understaffing and has started training people as certified nurses' aides for free through something called the WIS Caregiver Careers Program. That's according to an article in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The budget for the Wisconsin Fast Forward Workforce Development Program, however, has been cut by some 16% by the legislatures, suggesting that the Department of Workforce Development has failed to spend all the money it could on the program. The funding is now capped at $10 million or $2 million less than the previous cycle, something that we will, again, look to learn more about because we do have a very real problem with workforce development in the state, and we need all hands on deck, not just the legislators, but the administrators of programs, making sure that they're using our funds efficiently to get people trained for these industries that are so short on workers. But now we're going to turn our attention to how our elected officials should be promoting voting and protecting democracy. And we'll talk about some new bills with one of the sponsors, Representative Lee Snodgrass, coming up next. You're up north. All right, well, as we've noted a few times here, Republicans have seemed to have made a cottage industry out of undermining confidence in elections, making voting less convenient, making it more intimidating, making it hard to follow the dollars. Somebody needs to be trying to reverse this trend, and that somebody happens to be Democrats in the Wisconsin legislature, and State Representative Lee Snodgrass of Appleton is one of them, introducing a new package of bills meant to protect democracy. Representative Snodgrass joins us now. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Pat. Nice to be here.
Yeah, nice to see you there at the Capitol for another week of what should be productivity, but it isn't. And we're going to get into the details on that in just a bit. But I want to hear more about the legislation that's being proposed. You know, never mind what Republicans will or won't do with it. Just the fact that it has to be written and introduced at all is kind of saying something about the state of, you know, one political party in our democracy. Can you tell us kind of the basis of putting this package together? And then we'll also get into the specifics of what all is in it.
Absolutely. Yeah, really, these bills are in direct contrast to what we've seen from Republicans in recent years. Republicans are doing everything they can, it seems, to undermine confidence in elections. We wanted to make sure that we were introducing a good government package that reminds people that democracy is safe and sound in Wisconsin, and it really can be strengthened by some of the things that we're putting forward. So our bills do everything from increased voter access and education about the voting process and democracy. Power to the People is a great package of bills that freshmen Joyers and Ratcliffe have introduced as part of the package, which returns sort of the power of the referendum to the people. And then campaign integrity is led by Chris Larson, and that has some campaign finance reform in that package.
And look, again, when it comes to campaign finance reform, we're in the, you know, Citizens United era where it's almost anything goes. And while that's not going to be fixed, you know, by waving a magic wand, it is important to note that it actually can be fixed. We can actually go back to a system that follows the money and does not in any way impede the voters' ability to learn about the candidates, right?
Yeah, you know, this package is so comprehensive. I actually, if you don't mind, I'm just going to read it here in front of me.
Sure.
There's a Contributions Limit Act as one of his. There is a Closing the PAC Loophole Act. There's the Coordination Control Act, which places some financial limits on coordinated expenses. There's the No Corporate Campaigns Bribes Act. There's the Contribution Sunshine Act, which requires any committee that receives campaign finance of more than 100 cumulatively from an individual to report that. So essentially all of the bills in his package that we rolled out make sure that people know, you know, who their politicians that they're or their candidates are getting money from. It kind of helps to know who's supporting them with money. And as you know, that has been hidden largely.
Oh, the hiding is stunning in the way that it can be done by, you know, moving money around from group to group or even, you know, through county parties and then coming back to other campaigns along the way. And, you know, there's some that say, well, look, let's allow unlimited funds. Let's just do a better job of tracking it so it can be transparent. But I think if we've learned anything over the past 10 plus years of Citizens United is that that's not going, if you allow unlimited money through all these shadow organizations and other ways, it's just darn near impossible to track it. It would be better to have the kind of reasonable limits that let people participate in democracy, but not let, you know, the fat cats essentially get away with moving unlimited funds wherever they want to go.
Yeah, and this is really, truly a bill that, to be honest, his package is something that both sides have done. So it's not really a bill that's sort of attacking one party or the other. It's sort of saying for the people of Wisconsin, they deserve to know where the money that is supporting the campaigns of the people who are in office comes from.
It's a little bit off topic, but I was talking about it in the last segment here, that when it comes to protecting confidence in elections, that North Carolina Republicans overrode their Democratic governor's veto and are remaking their state elections board in a way that is much like Wisconsin, the way that Republicans set up the current elections commission for deadlock with three Democrats and three Republicans. They call it bipartisan, but by setting it up that way, you increase gridlock and you make it tougher to, you know, protect democracy and promote voting. As you look at the current system that is set up here, do you feel like one of the things that should be looked at some point is the makeup of our own elections commission, whether it's going back to the government accountability board model with retired judges or something else like that? Do you feel like that's going to be a necessary component to increase the security of Wisconsin election integrity?
You know, I'm not one of those people who was calling for the dismantling of WEC. I think largely WEC has done good work in providing guidance to our clerks throughout the state. Obviously, right now, some of the things that are happening with threats of impeachment and firing Megan Wolf and all of that, it has certainly complicated things. But I think the important thing is to remind people is that this is a mess of the Republicans' own making. They were the ones who dismantled the Government Accountability Board. They're the ones who established WEC, and now they're the ones who are complaining about what they put into place. So I think the important thing for people to realize is that Wisconsin's elections are not tainted. We have great, highly high integrity people working our elections in Wisconsin who take their job very seriously, who are on both sides of the aisle. The great thing is we don't know how those people vote. They just take that job of democracy really seriously. And some of the bills in our package are really going to help them do their job a little bit better and easier.
When you talk about the talk by Republicans of either impeaching Megan Wolf, the administrator of WEC, the Wisconsin Elections Commission, or even Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz, again, this is a dangerous level of talk for a democracy. And our top story right now over at UpNorthNewsWI.com comes off of the words of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss the other day, who basically acknowledged, yeah, this talk of impeaching Janet Protasiewicz, maybe we're not going to go that far. But he hinted that they may not have to because the U.S. Supreme Court could ride to his rescue. They already did last year in essentially throwing out a map because the conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court said that there were too many black majority assembly districts, 7 instead of 6. You know, just something that was stunning that Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor blasted the conservatives for doing. But it was clear the U.S. Supreme Court conservatives were willing to ride to the Republicans' rescue. And Robin Voss was essentially saying, we may not have to impeach Janet Protasiewicz. She and the progressive justices can rule however they want. I'll bet we can get the U.S. Supreme Court to overrule the Wisconsin Supreme Court, something that used to be unheard of. But I think it's a very real concern. I just wonder if you share that concern.
You know, first of all, Robin Voss likes to speculate, and in spite of what he might think, he's not always right. I still believe that there is some integrity when it comes to our highest court, in spite of some of the previous rulings. And I cannot imagine any justice of any merit finding reason to impeach Janet Protasiewicz, a justice who is yet to rule on a case. So I still have faith in the process. But I've been wrong before, but I've learned that speculation when it comes to some of these things is often pointless, because in any given day, in any given moment, the narrative changes and we have new information. I was thrilled to see former Justice Prosser's comments yesterday about don't do it. And that gave me a little bit of hope that, you know, perhaps the Amy Comey Barretts of the world won't come to his rescue on a white horse.
Yeah, let's hope so. And hopefully it was just Assembly Speaker Voss, you know, wishing out loud and not making any kind of a prediction. To get back to the package of legislation that you're working on, it's not just about, you know, some of the administrative functions, but also making sure that there are things like voter education and even just promoting voting. And look, some of us have always been promoting voting, but I think you need that more than ever. What kinds of things are you and your other co-authors doing to help people understand that despite all of the negative talk out there, that they really should be voting? Their vote has value. They shouldn't throw up their hands. They should still be participants in democracy.
Well, one of my favorite parts of the package is the part that I've, you know, part of drafting, which is really voter access and education for young people. We have a number of bills in the package that will make it easier for high school students to register to vote. And I'm sure you know, you've raised some kids. I had some kids who were teenagers not too long ago. You got to grab them where they are. They're busy. They've got extracurriculars. They're off with their friends. And one of the bills is going to allow them to have the materials at their school to register to vote. And even to pre-register 16 and 17-year-olds so that when they do turn 18, all that paperwork is done and they're ready to go. Another bill that actually is going to have some bipartisan support, I think, is a bill that came to us from Oshkosh West High School students a number of years ago, my first term, and that would require 1 hour of voter education in K through 12. And it came from young women who were really disappointed that their peers did not understand voting, the importance of voting. And they said, you know what, let's develop some curriculum. Let's work with the schools and let's figure out a way that we can appropriately let people know, whether they're kindergartners or seniors in high school, what voting's all about and why it's important.
You know, one of the things I really like about that is that we have been talking for cycles now about reaching the so-called swing voter. And that's not to say that there aren't swing voters out there, but A, there might be fewer than you count on. And B, by swinging it means they could really go any given way, depending on, you know, campaign ads and things like that. So instead of talking about the swing voter who's 40 and undecided about what they are, we're seeing much more of a focus now on reaching those new voters. And I think that's a positive, not only for democracy reasons, but for the reasons that these are people who have seen firsthand everything from the lack of gun safety measures in schools to the way their education was altered by the pandemic, and, you know, doing nothing, seeing no action on healthcare. I think we have a Generation Z, mostly of younger voters, who are more than ready, unlike, you know, my Gen X folks who are very apathetic. I think these folks are more than ready to say, where do I sign up? It's time for us to make a difference at the ballot box.
Yeah, and now we may have opportunities where we can make that easier for them to sign up. I agree with you, and I always go back to one time Michelle Obama had said to a young person, she said, "You wouldn't let me pick your music or your clothes, so why are you letting people like me pick who represents you in government?" And I've said that to a number of young people, and it kind of stops them in their tracks because they really have power as a voting bloc. And you're absolutely right. The big issues that I am working on and passing, they're not going to really impact me for that much longer, to be honest. It's going to impact the next generation, the millennials, the Gen Zs, and Gen Alpha, I think, we're already into. So I think it's incredibly important for them to realize the power that they have as a voting bloc and as an individual. And we certainly want to encourage it. That's what this country is all about. It's making sure as many people who are eligible to vote do get out there and vote.
I hate to end on a down note, but again, this is a false legislative session that could have seen action on child care, on a real middle class tax cut and such. But these bills that are being rushed through, these anti-trans youth bills, I mean, they've gone from introduction to committee hearing to committee vote and now to the floor of the assembly in some of the shortest timeframes I've ever seen. And I mean, that's coming up this week, isn't it?
It's coming up on Thursday. It's honestly abhorrent, disgusting, and shameful. We know that these are wildly unpopular. We had over 10,000 pages of testimony and people just packed the halls, yet they're moving forward. And the only reason they're doing this is that dog whistle issue that we've seen across the country that ignites their base. But I think it's harmful. I think it's harmful to introduce it. It's certainly super harmful to bring it to the floor. It didn't come to the floor last time. These are terrible bills. Democrats will be fighting against them. We'll be speaking out against them. And to our transgender and non-binary individuals, please know we have your back. You belong and you matter.
And that's where I think, again, not making a prediction here, but it just seems like, again, when you mentioned the backlash, the overwhelming turnout at the public hearings for these bills, that much gives me, you know, some hope that again, folks are not just throwing up their hands and saying, well, what are you going to do? That they are actively raising their voices. And part of it is most definitely because of folks like you that are helping, you know, rouse the troops, and it's greatly appreciated. Representative Lee Snodgrass, thank you so much for your time. It's great to visit with you on what I know is a busy week.
Thank you so much, Pat. Nice to see you all.
All right. Have a great day. When we come back, we'll talk to Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show and find out what he is discussing weekday afternoons from 1 to 3 all across the Civic Media Radio Network. That's coming up as we wrap up our conversation for this Wednesday on Up North News Radio. We'll be right back. All right, now I can make a confession as Todd Alba, man, myth, legend, joins us from the Civic Media Studios, where he is slow jamming his way into our studios.
nice song.
I have to confess now, yeah. I had to wait because I know my wife listens to the first hour as she's commuting to work. I think I've told this story before, but in case I haven't, my wife kept a secret from me for like the first 20 years of our marriage.
Do tell.
And I can't remember when exactly it came out, but I think anybody, whether you have a spouse, a partner, whatever the case, when you learn something new about them after many, many years, and it really kind of hits you like, I never suspected this about you. And she confessed, and she knows I listen mostly to older music. I'm an old man. That's what I do now. Listen to a lot of 70s and 80s music. And she knows one of my favorite groups. And she says, I got to tell you, I hate Hall & Oates. And I mean, it was just a punch in the chest. And I thought, oh no. And so by and large, when we're on road trips or in the car at all, if Hall & Oates comes on, because now I'm not the young jerk that I was, where I'd be passive aggressive and turn it up. Now I turn the station. We don't even talk about it. I just turn the station knowing, look, if I want to listen to Hall & Oates or something else, I'll do it on my own time. But today, on the occasion of Daryl Hall's 77th birthday, we went with pretty much all Hall & Oates for the bumpers, and I'm waiting for Sherry to either, when she calls at lunch or after work, going, yeah, you didn't tell me you were pretty much wall-to-wall Hall & Oates today. I'm like, yeah, I didn't. This is my show.
So do we understand, Pat, on your vacation, there was not a lot of Hall & Oates on the car radio or on the stereo?
There was absolutely no Hall & Oates on there whatsoever. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. One of her favorite groups from that era is Air Supply. I turn that dial every time they come on. I don't hate them the way she hates Hall & Oates, but I don't particularly like them. It was just weird that after all those years together, we're kind of a bit more honest about what from each person. She's a big fan of Pink right now.
Oh, really?
All right. I again, am not. To me, it's like, they're all kind of sounding the same. You know, you hear one Pink song, you've heard them all, which I am sure everybody is saying about Hall & Oates right now. But you like what you like, you know?
You like what you like.
Have your favorite. We let almost every one of our guests, have a say about their walk-on music.
Oh, really?
Right. You're pretty much the only one I have never asked about your favorite artist that we just abuse you and play whatever we want when we come on.
Pat Kreitlow maintains the don't ask, don't tell policy when it comes to music for me.
If he doesn't tell me, if I don't ask him his favorite music, I won't have to tell him how much I don't like it. So here it is, Todd.
Right,
here it is.
You.
In gratitude for filling in for me for part of my vacation last week, I am finally going to say, Todd, what do you like? What would you choose for your own walk-up music?
Well, I don't know. It depends. I'm a big Kenny Chesney fan. So, that's anything.
Nope, absolutely not. Hate him. No, we're never going to do it.
You hate
no.
Ken? Do you really no, hate
I'm,
Kenny
I'm
Chesney?
Teasing. I'm teasing. Oh, my gosh. No. My only thing on Kenny Chesney is, and I'm being a little harsh because I'm such a Jimmy Buffett fan, that he kind of struck me as, you know, I see what Jimmy Buffett's doing, and I'm, 30 years younger than him or whatever it is. I'm just going to start doing what he's doing, and eventually Jimmy's going to retire or move on, and then I'm going to own the beach music, getaway genre. And the fact of the matter is, he's done it. He's done it perfectly, and good for him. And maybe it was all sincere, but it just – I ascribed a conspiracy to it that I probably shouldn't have.
I can see that. I mean, they were, from my understanding, very good friends. They turned out to be very good friends, and they mm-hmm. toured together a little bit. And I think they were legit friends. But yeah, I mean, as you just described it, as it turned out, unfortunately, Jimmy Buffett passed away this year. And so I guess the genre is all his. But I think he actually has a house down in the islands. He actually lives it. He doesn't just sing.
Oh, yeah. Look, he lives. He walks the walk. He talks the talk. Yeah, absolutely. You are a walking billboard over here. You've got the Civic Media sign on the wall behind you, a Civic Media on the monitor, and the Civic Media t-shirt. They all match.
Yep. And it's, also, you can't see the Civic Media underwear. So
no, we don't. No, 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 we do not.
The boxer briefs.
Here's a good time
all your
to switch.
Junk news together.
Here's a good time to switch gears. Bill in Oconomowoc is on the line and wants to talk a bit more about young people taking part in democracy, something Todd and I like to talk about. So, Bill, what's on your mind?
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, and as long as you don't ask Todd about his underwear, we'll be good. So tell me about your original question.
I'm not going to go down that road today.
Don't go down that road at all. No, sir.
I think that what we ought to be pushing for a bill in Wisconsin that starting in elementary, they teach local governments, like in elementary school, teach local government. Go to a city hall or, some meetings, get involved, learn it for the upper grades of the elementary. In high school, go to the state government, learn that, and go to some hearings and stuff at the Capitol. I would believe we'd be helping our culture immensely by getting kids involved at a young age, because like Michelle Obama said, and that was a perfect quote, you know, nobody picks out your music. Nobody picks out your clothes. Nobody should pick out your politics. If kids could learn at a young level how we operate, a friend of mine said, if kids got involved at a young age in politics, when they were ready to vote, they'd take a chainsaw to it. I know they would. I know how kids function. So anyhow, thanks for letting me speak that.
Absolutely, Bill. Appreciate it so much. Have a great day.
Thanks,
and
Bill.
And actually, it's somewhat reminiscent or harkens back to something we talked about in our first hour, that kids are learning more and more about the changing climate and are leading those conversations now with their parents and with other grown-ups saying, what are you going to do about this? I know they already take civics classes. You and I both have seen the days when those fourth graders come into the state capitol. Mm-hmm. And those are some of the best days because you see how amazed they are at the building and how in awe they are of the people who work there. So there already is a civics component, but I agree with Bill that we can always do more in terms of, you know, educating about democracy, because again, we never thought we'd live in an era of having to defend and protect democracy, but here we are. So mm-hmm. let's go ahead and educate about it too.
I totally agree. I know that AP classes are important. I know that teachers are already overwhelmed. School districts are overwhelmed with what all the requirements they have. But I agree, just basic civics and also just basic finance. I mean, nobody really balances a checkbook anymore, but just the basic finances, I think those are things, that, you know, for everyday life that every kid knows.
But I'll tell you what, Andrew from Verona just made a great point on the text line. He says, problem is, civics isn't on the standardized tests,
right.
So it's tough to find time to teach it. I mean,
Can I put one thing before we leave? While you were gone, Sam was absolutely fantastic, and I came to understand, and he is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The homecoming was while you were gone, but I'm looking at the weather forecast. We better check in weatherology. Perhaps hell has frozen over, because a badger is wearing a Minnesota Golden Gopher sweatshirt this morning. I don't know what is going on here, Sam.
I know.
My apologies, Todd.
There's no apology. I just thought I'm concerned about you. Are you okay?
I'm mentally fit. If that's okay.
That's all. I just want to make sure.
I am glad about that. All right, Todd, thank you for that concern. Have a great show. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.
And we'll see the rest of you tomorrow.